Welcome to Coffee Talk from the Ground Up, an ECS podcast, where we strive to provide a more personable way to communicate with employees. I'm Steve Goslin, but you can call me Goose, and I'm part of our senior leadership team, and I'm joined here by Julie Smith, who is part of the marketing communications team and our resident chocoholic. Say hi, Julie.
Thanks, Steve. Hey, everyone. I'm glad you're joining us today. So, Steve, what are we doing here?
Great question, Julie. One of the struggles with a company our size is getting a message to the masses without it being diluted along the way. From projects and people to services and career insight, we hope this podcast helps provide an avenue to communicate the stories that are worth sharing. It's to learn about our culture and feel more connected, and to have some fun along the way.
So what you're saying is, we hope this podcast is educational, entertaining, and encouraging, with practical advice you can apply directly to your work and life.
Well said, Julie, and that's why you're in marketing.
So grab a cup and settle in. Our attorney makes us say this. This podcast is for entertainment and informational purposes only. Nothing herein shall be construed as providing professional engineering services or used to establish the standard of care. This podcast and the comments contained therein represent only the personal views of the participants and do not reflect those of ECS. While we make every effort to ensure that the information we are sharing is accurate, we welcome any comments, suggestions, or correction of errors.
Good morning, everybody. Welcome to Coffee Talk from the Ground Up. Really excited about our conversation today. We got Leo Titus joining us today. Before we get started, as always, we'll start with a safety minute. Today's safety minute, it's about trenching and excavation. Working in an unprotected trench is dangerous. And everybody's going, well, of course it is, but it's very dangerous. And a lot of times we take it for granted. We're in a hurry. We want to hurry up, get in and get out. And we think it's not a problem, but the walls from a trench or an excavation can collapse suddenly and without warning. When this happens, workers don't have time to move out of the way. A small amount of dirt may not seem dangerous, but one square yard can weigh more than 3,000 pounds. And that's the weight of a small compact car. And most people don't realize this. You get trapped immediately. If it covers you up, it's enough to either fatally crush you or certainly suffocate you. Trench collapses are rarely survivable, but completely preventable. Injuries and deaths associated with trenches continue to happen. In the past 15 years, there were almost 400 trenching fatalities, with more than 80% in the construction industry, so directly related to us and what we do out in the field. Engineering controls, protective equipment, safe worker practices, all these things can reduce hazards to workers and prevent trench cave-ins. Workers should never enter a trench that does not have a protective system in place. The protective system should be designed and installed by a competent person knowledgeable in trench protective systems and who can identify hazards and is authorized to correct them. So just be careful. All of us in the field are out in job sites that dirt's being moved around, and there's a lot of trenches, there's a lot of dangerous areas that we just look at, it doesn't seem dangerous to us. So please be careful. All right. Like I said, our special guest today is Leo Titus. And, you know, I'm excited for many reasons, but mainly just the relationship Leo and I have developed over about the last 15 to 20 years working closely together. When he was in his role as Mid-Atlantic president and I was in my role as Southeast president, we spent a lot of time together, shared a lot of thoughts and stories, and really it improved my ability to work and lead and manage and mentor. And so just before we get started, I just want to thank you for that, Leo. Leo currently serves as our chief operating officer. He began his career in 1997 as a geotechnical project manager in Chantilly, and he's got more than 30 years of experience in industry. I know he's worked his way up through the construction materials testing department, branch manager. He was a subsidiary vice president, I think managing like the northern region, and then subsidiary president. So yeah, he's had a long and storied and successful career. So let's start with some rapid fire questions. Leo, beach or mountains?
Definitely beach, anywhere near water. It doesn't have to be a hot beach, preferably, you know, it can be a rocky beach. I just like being near the water, wherever it is.
Yeah, I agree with that. Okay, favorite beverage?
That's depends on the day. And over time, I've kind of grown to be my favorite beverage is basically fine spirits, and you know, brown spirits, preferably rums, bourbons, whiskeys, scotch, cognacs. It depends on my mood and where I am and who I'm with.
Yeah, well, I would encourage you all, the next time you run into Leo, have a conversation about bourbons. I'm not a bourbon connoisseur, but I know what I like. But not only does Leo know what he likes, he could probably write a book on it. It's pretty remarkable spending time with him in a bottle of bourbon. If you could be a character in a movie, what character would you want to be?
All right, well, this one will probably surprise you. And you might not even know who it is. One of my favorite movies growing up was 2001, A Space Odyssey. And the person I always wanted to be was Dr. Haywood Floyd. And he was the guy in charge of the space administration. And his character was also in the sequel that came out. Roy Scheider played him in 1980. It was 2010 sequel. So I just always, when I was a kid, I wanted to be involved with space. I wanted to go to space. And that was kind of the guy I wanted to be.
Nice. Yeah, no, that. Yeah, I remember the movie well. I was in high school when it came out, and at the time it was actually Stanley Kubrick, and it was like you know groundbreaking out there. I mean, it was pretty crazy. Favorite or most recent read book?
I really like David McAuliffe, and the last book I read of his was The Wright Brothers. A lot of his books, they're all historical and nonfiction, and a lot of them have to do with technology and engineering, like Panama Canal or Johnstown Flood or Brooklyn Bridge. So I just enjoy his books. But that I read that about a year ago. I've really been into podcasts lately, speaking of podcasts. And besides Coffee Talk, I just finished listening to The History of Rome. And I am currently listening to Revolutions, learning about the French Revolution and other revolutions. Pretty neat.
Nice. Wow, that's good stuff. So what is something most people don't know about you?
Well, something most people don't know about me is I am a history nerd, but primarily a genealogist. I compiled a book, published a book back in 2003. I got into it when I was actually just started right out of college. I got kind of obsessed with history and family history. A Civil War documentary had come out on PBS, and I'd learned about my own ancestors fought in the Civil War and then the Revolutionary War. We didn't have the internet back then. And I started literally going across the country to libraries and doing research. And at night after work, I compiled a book, about 650 pages, 13,000 Tituses in the book. And I still have people this day. I keep one on my desk here in my office because every once in a while I'll get an email or someone asking a question about some distant relative from the 1700s of Titus that they're wondering if they're connected to, so I can quickly look it up and send them an email.
So your listeners, you can't see, but Leo held the book up and it looked like it was dog-eared. It had tabs and stuff like that. So what are you tabbing in there? What's pertinent or important?
Well, I mean, sometimes I'm, you know, if someone will email me, you know, and ask about a question, and I just keep a tab in the book where I might want to look something up. And there's all sorts of tabs in there about just specific individuals because I'm going back and forth. It's not the kind of book you're going to read from cover to cover. It's more of a genealogy book. It's a reference book. Mm-hmm. So you kind of have to go back and forth to find different pieces of information.
I know you use lots of resources. Have you used or have you spent any time on Ancestry?
Well, yeah, it's amazing. I wish I had it in the 1990s when I started this, because I literally would go to libraries and go to the stacks of books and pull them down, go to the index, look for anyone named Titus, and go find what page they're on. I'd take it over to the copier, I'd make a photocopy of the page, and then I'd go home and I'd try to put this puzzle together. And 10 years of doing that, I collected thousands and thousands of names and put a big part of that puzzle together and finally put it in a book. So yeah, Ancestry and the other tools that are out there now are amazing. DNA. So it's quite amazing how much you can find just sitting at your computer that I couldn't find back then, and mm-hmm. things in Europe, and it's a lot of fun.
Did you ever go and spend time in Salt Lake City at the library there?
I did. And now there's a couple copies of my book in that library there. Nice. Yeah. So, yeah. No, I did go there. I had an opportunity to go there for an ASTM meeting, as a matter of fact. But I went out there early and spent a weekend doing some research in the library while I was there many years ago.
Yeah. So a quick aside, my son Greg, for a birthday present for me and Karen a few years ago, maybe 4 or 5 years ago, actually bought a subscription to Ancestry. And then he did the DNA test. And so that was in there. And my wife, Karen, has a cousin who actually changed his name to Mason. Her maiden name is Mason. And so his name is Jeffrey Mason. And he showed up in the DNA search. And he had no idea. And he's like, who's this guy in Birmingham, Alabama, Jeff Mason? I was like, oh, yeah. So, you know, told him that story. And so it was amazing. The people that had tested that he was connected to in that part is like, wow, some of these people I'd know. And so I've spent time on and off and on over the last 4 or 5 years, not nearly as intensive as you have, but you know, I plan to spend more time. It's absolutely fascinating. It's incredible. Yeah. I encourage all of our listeners just to spend a little time and look into your family history. It's incredible.
Yeah. A lot of fun. I mean, you know, I kind of, once I published that book in 2003, I put it down and I got busy with working on master's degrees and kids. I had 3 girls and my career. And I really, through my 30s and 40s, didn't do much with it. And just recently, within the last couple of years, got onto Ancestry and I'm starting to get back into it. I noticed one thing when I was in my 20s working on this thing, I'd go to the libraries and I was the youngest person in the room. There were all these retired people in the room doing their family history. And I was this 20-year-old kid. And now I'm realizing, you know, maybe someday down the road, that'll be me again, that retired person in the library looking stuff up like they were.
Yeah. Good for you. That's a great story. So tell us a little bit about, before we get started, I want to ask you, share with the listeners, share with me and Julie, where you grew up. I think you're from Northern New York, but just give us a little idea about where you grew up in town and where you went to school and that type of stuff.
Sure. Yeah. Well, I was born up in Western New York, in Olean, New York. My parents went to St. Bonaventure University. My dad moved around a little bit when we were kids, but ultimately when I was in middle school, we settled down in Saratoga Springs, New York, which is where my mom was born. My grandfather was born. His mother was born. So we have some deep roots in Saratoga Springs, a very historical town. It's where the Horse Racing Hall of Fame is. No offense to the folks in Louisville, but Saratoga, that track's older than Churchill Downs, and they have the oldest stakes race in the country. And we're pretty proud of it. It's a great town to grow up in. It's called the summer place to be. It's the resort where all the rich and famous in the turn of the century and back in the 20s and 30s would go up to Saratoga to enjoy the cool northern New York weather and watch the races in the summer.
Nice. Yeah. Yeah. I've not been to that part of New York. I've been, I guess, somewhat close to Finger Lakes area and all that stuff. It's just beautiful up there. So how did you get interested in civil engineering and, you know, geotechnical engineering and all that stuff? And of course, right over Leo's shoulder is a banner pennant for Clarkson University, which I know will be part of the story. But how'd you get interested in this stuff?
Well, it's kind of, you know, I told you about my science fiction movie, you know, wanting to be Dr. Haywood Floyd, right? And, you know, I was a kid, you know, thinking I wanted to get into what career could I get into to maybe go to space, to build space stations or go to the moon, that kind of thing. And that was my dream. And, you know, funny thing is I was telling my kids this one time when they were younger, we were watching 2001: A Space Odyssey. And I told them what I just told you about, you know, this movie had inspired me to become an engineer. And I wanted to go to space and this and that. And they said, well, now you just deal with dirt. So they were, how'd that work out, right? So, you know, I actually started in school as a mechanical engineer. I decided to go to Clarkson University in upstate New York. And I studied mechanical. I was taking the foundation courses. And my sophomore year, I had a real tough time with rigid body dynamics, all the moving parts. I was struggling to wrap my brain around the moving parts and dynamics. Wasn't doing too well in that class. And I got a summer job working for a mason. I was a mason's helper, mixing mortar and carrying block. So everything we worked on stood still. We were building buildings and sidewalks and walls and things. It was really, I got it. Everything stood still, and I was really good in statics. So I switched my major to civil engineering. But what I didn't realize when I graduated with a civil and environmental engineering degree is what technically what my degree was. All the different branches I had to choose from. You know, I didn't know about geotechnical engineering when I graduated. I knew soils was part of the whole thing, but it was really an accident of how I got into what we're doing. I mean, you know, the economy was not good in 1991 when I graduated. I was one of the few lucky people in my class, civil engineering group, to actually have a job on graduation day. And went to work up, in the Baltimore area. And I was sharing an office with someone that was doing geotechnical engineering. So I started learning about classifying boring or soil, you know, soil samples in the lab, going out in the drill rig, doing all that stuff. And that's kind of how I got into where I am today.
Okay. All right. Good. Good story. Yeah. I mean, we all have some circuitous route just getting into the industry and how we make those life decisions early on when we're 18, 19, 20 years old. Like I said, you want to someday maybe land on the moon or build a space station. Next thing you know, you're doing geotechnical engineering.
Going down in French. Yeah.
That's right. So tell us a little bit about, you know, getting through, working your way through the industry. I know you start out with a competitor, some of the things you did there, and then the transition and getting to ECS. How'd you find us?
Another good story, I guess. I mean, for me, you know, I started off, like I said, in Maryland, working for a competitor, and we, you know, learning a little bit about the business. And within a couple of years, they had asked me to manage a small office up in New England. So I moved up to New England, Worcester, Massachusetts. Had 4 employees. On any given day, I was either going out and, you know, slumping concrete, or I was laying out borings, or I was running out doing environmental phase 1 site assessment, doing some water sampling. I was doing everything. I was learning a lot. I was only 23, 24 years old, so I certainly didn't have a lot of experience, but I was getting a lot. And I think one of the most important parts of that for me, well, there's 2 things really. When I first got there, I had no idea how to bring in work. I had no idea, you know, I knew that I had to, but I wasn't taught that. You don't learn that in school as an engineer. So maybe it was just natural instinct. I picked up the yellow pages and I started calling architects. I started calling contractors and just starting to get to know people. I didn't know anybody. And gradually we grew. And that was the other part of, you know, I didn't know how to manage people. No one taught me how to deal with, you know, technicians and admin staff and the things that you know, just managing a team. And I had to learn that as well, kind of trial by fire. So it was a good experience. As I learned more, I started to not like some of the management practices coming down from the organization. It was a private equity owned company, and they were really focused on the month-to-month numbers and not so much focused on long-term growth and things that would make the company better. And I just started to intuitively see things that I just didn't like the direction it was going. By then, I had moved down to Fairfax, Virginia. They'd asked me to take over a larger office down there. In that office, a couple folks that I worked with, Patty Phillips and Mike Sawyers. Mike Sawyers was geotechnical project manager, and he left and joined ECS, and we were good friends, still are good friends. And I called him up one day. I kind of had it with what was going on at the company there. We went out and we went to a golf tournament, actually, and I said, you know, anything you do to help me get out of where I was, I appreciate it. Next day I got a call, and then a couple days later I was having lunch with Henry Lucas and Jim Carpenter. And a few days after that, Jim Carpenter was at my door, at my house, with an offer letter and an envelope, hand-delivered, and the rest is history. So, and then not too long after that, within days, Patty Phillips joined ECS, and And I don't know if you know this, Steve, but Mike Sawyers is back with ECS as of about a week ago.
So I didn't know that. That's great.
He's working back up here with us. We're very excited to have him back. So that's my story of how I got in the door to ECS.
Okay, so that's how you got here. Tell us a little bit about your journey with the company. I mean, you've had multiple roles and influenced hundreds of people and interacted with thousands of clients. I mean, tell us a little bit about, you know, your time here at ECS as best you can. I mean, I can see they're scratching your head like, man, I mean, that's, you know, that's 20, you know, plus years, 25 years of good stories.
Yeah. Well, I mean, it's kind of, you kind of touched on it a little bit when you introduced me, but for a time there, it was like every 2.5 years, it was a different, I'm in a different position. I came on as a project manager in the geotechnical department. I really wanted to learn more engineering that I had not learned. I didn't have a good mentor, technical mentor over at my other company. So that was, you know, I was working with Jim Carpenter and Manol and others in the geotechnical department. But I had a lot of experience with the materials testing side of things. And I was, you know, working on those types of projects as well. And I tend to be opinionated and willing to say what I think about things. And I would always ask questions about, well, why are we doing it this way? Shouldn't we be doing this? Shouldn't we be doing that? When it came to the materials testing stuff. And I opened my mouth a few too many times and someone said, well, you don't like it, maybe you should do it. You know, the way, you know, so basically an opportunity came up. They put me in charge. They asked me to do it. And I didn't say yes right away. I was a little reluctant because I wanted to do engineering. I wanted to learn geotechnical engineering. And I knew if I went over there to the materials testing, I wasn't going to be able to do as much of the geotechnical learning because I know what it takes. I mean, that's running a D4 materials testing group, it's a tough job. A lot of work. It's rewarding. But anyway, I ultimately said, you know what, this is probably my highest and best use to help the company right now. I did it. I went over there and did that and ran field services for a few years. And then as we grew, as the company was growing, there was more and more opportunities. And my supervisor, Jim Baldridge, moved into a new role as a regional manager, subsidiary president, which opened up an opportunity to become the Chantilly office manager. So I was the third Chantilly office manager. So Henry Lucas was the first, Jim Baldridge was the second, and then it was me. I did that for a few years. We continued to grow and became a regional manager. I was the central region manager for Mid-Atlantic, everything from Winchester over to Southern Maryland. And then it wasn't too long after that, Jim Baldridge retired as the subsidiary president, and then I was asked to take over as the Mid-Atlantic president, which I did for 13 years. So a lot of change. The first half of my career at ECS, every 2-3 years, I was in a different role, and then took over as the subsidiary president, was there for quite a long time, helping the team build and grow Mid-Atlantic.
Mm-hmm. And so it was, I think, a little over a year ago, and you moved into the position of Chief Operating Officer, is that right?
Yes, it's been a year and a half.
Okay, yeah. So tell us a little bit about that transition and, you know, what are, you know, how you interact with folks, what are, you know, some of your current goals and objectives, you know, kind of give us an idea about responsibilities, vision, you know, things like that.
Sure. Well, it's a couple, there's more than a couple, there's a lot of different aspects to it that, you know, first, yeah, I've been in Mid-Atlantic for my whole career, and I worked very closely with the folks in Mid-Atlantic, and I know people in the offices and visiting offices in Mid-Atlantic, and I don't know, well, anyway, people outside of Mid-Atlantic. I know people that I see maybe once a year at a manager's meeting and chit-chat with them, say hello, but I really don't know them. So one of the things I wanted to right off the bat was let Sal Fiorentino, Sal took over as the subsidiary president, kind of let him do his thing and not be, you know, get out of his way and run Mid-Atlantic his way and get outside of Mid-Atlantic and meet people. So getting on the road and talking to people and get to see offices that I haven't seen before and try to the best of my ability to get to know folks a little bit better outside of Mid-Atlantic. the role of chief operating officer for ECS is relatively new. I mean, the position hasn't existed very long. And so it hasn't been well defined. And that's an evolution. And Tony and I talk about this. And my focus is on operations, fundamentals of the business that makes us successful, working with the subsidiary presidents to share, you know, my experiences and helping them grow. And if you look across the company, we've got very mature subsidiaries in Mid-Atlantic and Southeast, and we've got relatively newer subsidiary that have a lot more growth ahead of them. You know, they're going to go through growing pains that Mid-Atlantic and Southeast have gone through already. So sharing those experiences, helping them navigate those, helping them to avoid the mistakes that I made over the years, it's part of my role. And recruiting, business development, risk management, getting involved with IT systems and trying to help make our processes more efficient, better for the user, make everybody's job easier. There's a wide range of things. Every day is a little bit different. I travel, I'm here, you know, meetings, you know, it's just every day. It's an interesting job because there's always something different to sink your teeth into. And I see one of my goals is I'm not going to be in this role forever, and to help, hopefully, better define the role and help, you know, so that the next person who comes behind me has a clear understanding of how to be effective in this role and help the company succeed.
Yeah. Well, so far you're doing a great job. And one of the things you're best at is just your ability to interact and connect with our folks. I mean, I know you and I have done a lot of that. We've gone to town hall meetings before in the past, and just your ability to sit there and ask questions and understand people's needs and concerns is really important to the company. So continue to do that. One of the things I want to ask, and just give us a quick state of the company. Based on what I'm seeing, we're in good shape. And I know that you're going to deflect to, you know, there's so much work to do and so many things to work on, which there always are. And most of them are good problems. But, you know, just a quick, what's the state of the company right now?
Well, the state of the company is very good. I think when we went through the Great Recession of, you know, the 2008 to 2010, it was a scary time. None of us had seen anything like it and been through anything like it. And one of the things that I learned through that, and I've said this before, especially with folks in Mid-Atlantic over the years, so those of you listening, you've heard me say this, but one of the things that I've learned is we are a very resilient company. And you saw that through the cyber attack as well. We, you know, whatever external forces are thrown our way, we are very good at facing them head on, tackling them, and coming out stronger than we were. So, you know, the state of the company is very good. And what I think about is all of the growth opportunities ahead of us and the amount of opportunities for people in the company to advance their career and do new things is really exciting because, you know, if you think about it, and again, I've said this many times, we're going to double the size of this company. And, you know, that means we are going to have twice as many people. And that means we're going to have twice as many managers and twice as many, you know, regional managers than we do now. The company is going to expand into the West and the Northwest, into the Northeast, more in the Midwest. So there's thousands of people out there that are walking around on the planet that don't know it yet, but they're going to be wearing ECS logos at some point in the future. So I'm excited for that. I'm excited to see it happen and to help make that happen. We're very strong. I mean, there are a lot of clouds on the horizon with the economy, right? But we have a team of veterans. I mean, we've been through tough times and we have good information to help us manage through those tough times. So if we're disciplined and we pay attention to that good information that we have and we use it, we will come out stronger than if we go into a downturn, which we have to go to a downturn eventually. It's a cyclical business. We will manage through it well and we will come out stronger and keep on chugging.
Yeah, great. Well, thanks for sharing that with us. And on behalf of all our listeners, just want to thank you for your hard work, your leadership, your commitment, and your enthusiasm. I mean, it came through loud and clear right there. It's just how enthusiastic you are about the company and our future. So thanks. Julie, you got a few questions for Leah?
Yeah, of course.
You know, Leo, you were talking earlier about early on in your career, you weren't taught in school about the aspects of business development, and you just kind of took the initiative upon yourself, you know, using the yellow pages. I'll pretend like I don't know what those are. But can you share with us a little bit more about like how valuable networking has been to your career, especially as, you know, again, an engineer by training and by trade, even though you're a technical person, you know, I come back to the fact that we are also consultants, and that's part of the networking connecting piece. So can you just share a little bit more about the value of networking?
Yeah, it's critical in my opinion. Right. And for me personally, and for my career, it's been really a foundation of success. And early on, like you said, you mentioned my experience with going into the Yellow Pages. You know, I also, you know, sought out places where clients hung out. And I'm not talking about like going to a bar and trying to see if there's any clients there. I'm talking about associations, you know, groups where architects would get together and have their luncheons to talk. You know, and I wasn't familiar with that sort of thing. I was very young, but I learned quickly about these. And so I sought out places where our clients would hang out, and I started to join associations and get involved. And that was, you know, a great opportunity and a great learning moment for me about networking, building relationships with clients. Not just cold calling and selling, but getting to know people, becoming friendly with people, going golfing with people, and how much that has an impact on your business. Not too much later, I started to, this is really right when I joined ECS, I was asked to join the board of directors of WASL, which is a technical organization. It's an association of, frankly, competitors. And, you know, the first thought is, well, why would I want to hang out with a bunch of competitors? And because I want to go talk to clients. As a matter of fact, I remember a story. I was traveling, and I was at a conference, and I had my kids with me. We went to dinner, and a couple of people at the table were competitors. This was a technical thing. And we got in the car, we're leaving, and I was telling my oldest daughter was asking me, Daddy, who were those people we were having dinner with? And I told them, I explained to them, competitor. She said, well, what's a competitor? And I told him what a competitor was, and she kind of looked incredulous, and she said, why are you having dinner with them? So, you know, it's just not what you would think. But my point, the reason I'm going here is because I found that getting involved, as important as it is and to get involved with your clients, it's just as important, I think, to get involved with technical and industry associations. WASL was a regional one here in the Virginia, Maryland area. But I was at the table, and we were setting the rules for our industry. So I could be at the table helping define those rules, or I could be back in my office waiting for someone to tell me what the rules were. And I thought it a heck of a lot more important, where I found it to be very valuable to be able to have my influence and put my opinion into what those rules were going to be. And then I got involved with national associations like ASTM. I'd spent many years as chairman of the committee that writes the standard that our materials testing group followed. Again, you know, having an influence, a significant influence on the words in that document that are the basis of how we do certain things, as opposed to, you know, just waiting for someone else to tell me this is how we're going to do it. ASTM, ASCE. GBA, the Geoprofessional Business Association. A lot of you probably know I'm the president of that this year. There's a lot of value in being actively engaged with those associations and helping to improve the industry as a whole.
Yeah, and I would add ACEC to that list as well too. I know.
Yeah, absolutely.
In many states and many regions, we're very active there as well too. And I know when I joined ECS, there was a little pushback in getting involved in that, but we're actually, as a company, very involved both on the local and national level. And just like you alluded to, Leo, it's really paid off. Sorry, Julie, I just had to get a plug in there for ACEC. I mean, Derek Clyburn, who's now the president of ECS Southeast, is immediate past president here in North Carolina and on the national board.
Exactly. Okay, so Leo, can you break it down for us? What advice would you give to our listeners who may be interested, you know, especially hearing you promote these opportunities, what are the like first next steps, or what encouragement or advice would you give to our listeners who are interested in becoming involved in some of these professional organizations?
A couple things. First of all, you have to want to do it. I encourage you to, if you find an association or a organization that is aligned with your interests, if you're passionate about it, you're going to want to be there and you're going to enjoy it more, as opposed to you're going somewhere that you really don't want to be, right? So finding organizations that are aligned with what you're focused on, whether it's business development with clients, whether it's a technical association, industry association, whether it's a charitable organization, because there's a lot of good charitable organizations as well that are aligned with our industry as a whole. Find one that you're interested in, because that really helps. And then get involved. Don't just show up to the luncheons. Get on a committee. Get to know folks. Seek to be on the leadership, whether it's a board of directors or executive committee or something. Find leadership positions in the organization. A, you're going to find that you'll build stronger relationships with folks when you're getting involved, and you're going to have more of an impact. It's going to bring more value, not just to the organization, but to you individually and to ECS. So just showing up at lunches and finding a seat to talk to someone that sits down next to you, yeah, that's okay. You got to do that, but the real value in the networking groups on these industry associations is how involved you get with them.
Thank you. All right, Steve, you want to wrap this thing up?
Okay. Yeah. And I'm going to jump back up to the last rapid fire question and kind of put Leo on the spot a little bit here. So, what is something most people don't know about you? And so Leo is a bit of a foodie. He loves to travel, loves all kinds of cuisine. Obviously, he likes bourbons and spirits and things like that. But I follow Leo on Instagram. I think he follows me too, but I follow Leo on Instagram. And I am incredibly jealous of these pictures that he posts on Instagram of how he perfectly frames his meal and the glass of wine in the background and the light is coming through. And it's like, I try it and I post it and it's like, it doesn't even look anything close to like Leo does. So, but anyway, Leo loves to travel and he just absolutely loves different kind of food. So what's your favorite food, man? Some of the places you traveled, some of the things you eat, and what's your favorites?
There's so many to name. Again, similar to the beverage question, depends on my mood, where I am, but I love smoking a brisket or some ribs or pork butt. It's hard for me to walk by pizza or chicken wings without grabbing a slice or two. But yeah, smoking meat. I love seafood. I like everything. Some of them are maybe the simplest meals. It depends on where I am. There's a little town in France on the Mediterranean that my wife and I she has family there, and we fortunate enough we get to go there every couple of years or so. And just a bowl of mussels and fries and some house red wine. That is just awesome, So again, I guess I'm a foodie. I'm an amateur when it comes to cooking the food, but I'm a professional at eating it. So I like good stuff. We could do a whole nother podcast on that.
Oh, yeah, absolutely. Yeah, I actually live vicariously through Leo and his travels, and it's like, where is he? What in the world? Look at this meal. And it could be, like you said, you could be at a barbecue joint right down the road. You could be at a seafood restaurant in Boston. And it's like, wow. So anybody who posts beautiful pictures of their food is a foodie. Yeah. So you need to own that.
I don't do it that often, but every once in a while when I'm looking, I'm like, man, this looks good. I'm going to take a picture of that.
Okay. All right. We did a lot of talking about career and ECS and leadership and upward mobility and networking and winning work and stuff like that. I wanted to get a little bit more of the personal side of Leo, and I'd encourage all of you. He's like really all the leadership in the company. He's always got his phone. You can text, email, call. He'll pick it up. He'll get right back to you if he's not available. He wants to hear what you have to say. So, you know, please take advantage of that. And don't take that for granted, because he knows not every company's like that. And, you know, we make ourselves very available. So, you know, thanks for doing it. So we'll wrap it up. We always ask this question to wrap up the show. What fills your cup? What makes you happy or brings you joy?
Well, you know, I was listening to Rick Hinson's podcast. I think it was the last one you did. And something he said kind of struck a chord with me. You know, that what fills my cup has evolved over the years. You know, back when I was in my 20s, what filled my cup was I'd come home and I'd go down in my basement after dinner and I would crack open my books and work on my family history. And I love doing that. You know, as time evolves, your focus changes and the things that make you happy changes. Honestly, these days, time with my family, I've got 3 daughters. My youngest is 19. My oldest is 25. And, you know, the older they get, the less I see them. You know, they're not home every day, right? You know, they're off to college or they're out on their own now. So spending time with family, you know, both my immediate family and my brothers and my parents, we're fortunate enough to live relatively close. We get to spend a lot of time together, having a big lunch on Sunday together. And then if it's not with family and friends, I mean, just getting out on a kayak down Chesapeake Bay and fishing. I don't care if I catch fish. I just like being out there. It's an excuse to go sit on the water by myself, whether it's coffee in the morning or a beer in the afternoon out in the kayak. That's peace for me. So really enjoy that.
Excellent. Yeah, great. Well, you know, we'll wrap this up. This was excellent today. As you know, I always enjoy spending time with you, regardless of whatever fashion. And so this has been a special treat just to spend time and have this conversation with you today. You know, on behalf of our listeners and everybody in the company, I want to personally thank you for everything you do for everyone and your commitment to each and every person and our success. Yeah, thanks for taking time out of your busy schedule. I know how busy you are and everybody is at the corporate office. So taking about an hour out of your time is very valuable, but it's very valuable and very important to us to get to know you a little bit better. So thanks for sharing with us.
Well, thank you.
Thank you for listening to Coffee Talk from the ground up. We hope you enjoyed today's episode. If you have an idea on future topics, guests, or are up for a round of call, you can call me, text me, email me, just get in touch with me and I'll get it to Julie and we'll get it set up.
And for those of you that don't want to play golf and you may hate talking on the phone, that's okay. You can send us an email at ecsmarketing@ecslimited.com. Be sure to follow us on social media and subscribe to this podcast so you never miss an episode.
Thanks, Julie. Here's to having a great day.